All right, guys. Hey, man, that was the best one yet.
That's what he says every time.
Hello, and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 41, Practical Tips for Writing an Internal SLA. Here we go. Today, my co-host is Simone Bennett. How you doing, Simone?
Well, thank you.
Thanks to you so much for being available to be on the show again. It's been a while. I've had some time zone challenges adjusting, and I apologize for that. Thank you for rescheduling. And also joining us is Hayden McManus. Hayden, how are you?
Hey, really good, thanks, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing well. Hayden, this is your first time on. Can you give everybody the elevator pitch about you, where you're from, and what you do and all that?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I'm AU Ticket's core team member, which is how I know Simone. That's an online community forum based in Australia around all sorts of different technologies. But professionally, I'm the chief operating officer at Comms IT. We're a small SME, and we do a lot of work in the IT managed services space in and around Melbourne, Victoria.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool. And what's your Twitter ID also?
HJ McManus.
Cool, cool. And I'll put that in the podcast notes, so people can thoroughly stalk you down afterwards. So what I wanted to talk about, guys, was writing SLAs, you know. And I had this idea in my head that IT pros, you know, have to satisfy their stakeholders, right? And I think that both of you guys have been through it to some level, and I have as well. But I was wanting to just kind of openly talk about things that we've done to really develop some internal SLAs that people can take and use elsewhere in their organizations. So does anybody have any lead-off ideas, like one big thing to start with, you know, when we talk about an SLA?
Talk to the business. Don't just guess what they want.
Oh, that's for sure. It is definitely, it frequently kind of gravitates to being more a business conversation, I think, right? You know, it's not a technical conversation. You just got to, I think, first of all, I guess would also be identify the stakeholders with the business, you know, because frequently they're not in IT, you know, some of the stakeholders. That's a hard transition, though. You know, sometimes I'm a big old ham. I'll go talk to anybody, but what do you guys think? Is it tough going out of your IT comfort zone and talking to the business?
Yeah, look, it can be. In my business, we don't support internal staff. We support other companies' staff. So you've often got to, first of all, as you've already said, identify that key stakeholder, get to know them, get to have a good relationship and become sticky with them. But I think it's probably really important as well to get out of those corporate type meetings and walk around the bullpen a little bit, have a talk to the people who are actually using the PCs, the software, learn what their pain points are, and then use that information that you get there to go back to having another one of these corporate type management meetings, because unless you understand what the end user actually does, you really can't manage what the expectation is going to be that's going to be fed back to their management.
You know, you just like made all kinds of sense with that. I'm like sitting there spinning in my mind. And that is just so simple, yet it makes perfect sense. That's incredible advice, because you have to have I guess the right word is perspective, right? You have to have a perspective about what these SLAs are going to govern. So the best way to do that is to really, you know, enrich that experience, you know, to the endpoint. And that's incredible. Good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, at the end of the day, the management team of the company that we're supporting judge us, and they form their judgments and opinions on their subordinates reporting back to them on how IT is going in their environment. So, yeah, unless you know what you're playing with, you really can't deliver anything.
What about the situation where I don't have time to do that, right? I'm bamboozled with all these different things, work, you know, I'm too busy to really investigate that. Is it better to just kind of back up and say, look, I can't give you an SLA if I can't properly, you know, do it? I mean, what about pushback? You know, is that something we should consider sometimes also?
Yeah, look, I think that's true. But I mean, if you've got some kind of business relationship with someone where you're supposed to be delivering a product or a service or infrastructure or whatever it is you're doing, there's got to be a metric around it. There's got to be a, hey, you've earned your paycheck this week. So, you know, maybe in this case, then your SLA can become a little bit more loosely defined. Yeah, sure. But I think everyone should always fight to try to formalize that arrangement as much as possible. So maybe you could use a looser arrangement to start with, but aim towards building towards something in a more structured way.
Man, Simone, you found a good one. This guy's good. Awesome.
Thanks.
No, I mean that, Hayden. This is really good advice because, you know, these are the challenges that we deal with, right? We don't have the bandwidth within our own organization to a lot of times do some of the things correctly, and I think that's excellent advice to have a more looser SLA, because I think that the takeaway is that the expectation is always there, right? That that there's this level of service, defined or not, there is an expectation.
Agreed.
So let's take it a little bit in a different way. Is this something that you usually, you know, draft in a policy? Is it something you put up on a SharePoint site? Is it just you know, three numbers that you memorize, you know, this much retention, this much time for recovery, or, you know, what kind of what's the end product look like?
Well, for me, it's a mixture of various different things. I think you hit a couple of nails on the head there, Rick. You've got several documents that I think are important. One of them is going to be various IT policies. So in this case, that's a good way for us to be able to lock down expectation management in the user base. Your IT policy will state, you know, whether or not the company's going to allow you to surf Facebook all day, or whether or not you're going to be allowed to bring your own laptop in, or what, you know, what's supported is often defined in the policy. From there, I mean, you're going to have your magical numbers. If you're running a virtualized environment for someone where you're hosting servers or Exchange or something like that, you're probably going to be looking at, you know, as many nines in that uptime as possible. And that's all going to depend really, I think, in our case anyway, on where you're hosting it, how much budget the user's got, and, you know, what support you know you can deliver, because there's no point promising something you can't deliver. So you've got to become realistic with your client, and it all becomes just a big conversation, really.
Sure. That's awesome. What about you brought up something. I'll just take the Facebook example. What about the enforcement side, right? So here's this agreement, and here's a expectation that the stakeholder is going to have. What about mechanisms that may enforce those types of things? Are those a good idea? So in the case of Facebook, I'll say, well, let's just block Facebook, you know, on the internet traffic. Is that, you know, a reserved thing that, you know, if it helps meet the expectation, is that something that we should do? And that's one example. There's all kinds of things we can do in terms of enforcement. But the takeaway is if we do things that kind of enforce the SLA, but maybe take away services, a.k.a. call it services, if you want to call Facebook a service in the workplace, but take things away from other interests, is that a good idea?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, that comes back to what I was saying at the outset when we were talking about how we should maybe define what service we're putting forward. You've got to go and talk to the end users. You've got to understand what their workday is like, what the stresses are in their business, you know, whether or not, you know, the office is a happy environment. I think if you just become, you know, good old Dilbert cartoon character, Morduk, preventer of IT services, you're going to become pretty unpopular pretty quickly. So you need to understand exactly what it is that that you're trying to achieve. So in our case, my business has recently had this whole Facebook thing happen at a client, and they actually need Facebook to be available for various corporate reasons. You know, they've got a Facebook page. They need to be able to reference material off it, lots of other stuff like that. So there are various products out there in the marketplace that we can use that will lock down just parts of it. For example, we use Sonic Wall firewalls. We resell that. It becomes a nice sticky point where we can make another sale into the business, and we can set up rules in and around how the software runs on the firewall that will actually stop bits of Facebook, like, you know, one of those real big time wasters out there is Farmville and stuff like that. So you can actually lock that down. You can lock down Facebook chat. You can lock down, you know, little components of it, but still allow access to the service. Another company we deal with also allows their employees between the hours of 12 p.m. and 1 p.m. every day to have full access. So it's like their lunchtime Facebook fix. So I think we need to do things that will support the SLA with the business, but also not really ruin the end user's experience.
So Hayden, don't you think that people that are treated like adults and given full access to everything and a list of tasks they need to complete will behave better and work harder than people who are forced to do a certain amount of work in a certain amount of time and treated like children who can't be trusted? Like, don't you find that I personally work better in an environment where I know what I have to achieve. I have to achieve it by a certain date. And if I don't achieve it, then there's ramifications. But otherwise, I could do what I like. I can come and go when I like. I can sit on Facebook all day if I like. Do you think that's a better way to work?
Look, yeah, it comes down to personal preference and management. Look, I totally agree with you, Simone. I would perform better in that environment. I'm the type of guy who'll pop onto Facebook or Twitter or something like that multiple times a day. And I do that when I'm just sort of resting the brain. You know, I go pretty hard. I start early, I finish late. And I find that allows me to sort of refocus my mind. Some people really dislike that in the business, and I think in businesses, and I think we really only look at, you know, enforcing that if a business comes to us and says, look, we know that these guys are not performing as well as they could be, blah, blah, blah. We have that conversation with them. If at the end of the day they want to lock something down, we can do it because it helps us meet an SLA target with them. But it's certainly not something that I would walk into a new customer and say, hey, guys, guess what? We're going to lock your internet down so tight no one's going to be able to do anything but work. So, yeah, that's not how we roll.
What about, internet's a good example, right? I mean, in my workplace, especially in my role, I have to manage Twitter, Facebook, and, you know, Google Plus, stuff like that as part of my role. And honestly, sometimes it's a little bit distracting to have to go into there for work, especially Facebook. Twitter's a little bit different because I just look at the lists of interest and stuff. But, you know, what about some other examples? I guess maybe, you know, I'm thinking more around in the virtualization world. You know, if we have an SLA for this, that might translate, for example, to a resource pool that takes away resources from that. Have you ever had those types of scenarios come up?
I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
I'm throwing a virtualization tough one out there. Basically, you know, if we have this shared environment in VMware, for example, where we have compute and memory and network resources shared, what I'm getting at is how do we deal with contention?
Yeah. Gotcha. So if someone's doing something they shouldn't be, it uses up resources that aren't supposed to be.
Yeah, or if we want to provision the email server to be, you know, king of the hill, and then that makes the web server performance not so great, you know, what kind of strategies do you have for coexistence, I guess?
Okay, cool. So I suppose what you're driving at there is a little bit of change management.
Yeah, sure, because that's very important, yeah.
Yeah, okay, well look, you know, there's various schools of thought on ICT change management out there. Personally, I subscribe to the ITIL school of thought where you'd have a CAB or a change advisory board. It all sounds very draconian and time consuming, but a CAB can be as informal as three people meeting around the water cooler for 10 minutes and having a talk. It's basically a real quick conversation that usually gets documented in a follow-up email or something like that to the person who controls the resource that's being affected, and it says, all right, we want to do this. We think these are the knock-on effects. What do you guys think? And all the other guys who have a slice of the pie and the resources go, yes, you can do this, or no, it'll affect us this way. And, you know, we do it that way. It can be really quick and easy, although I have seen organizations do it really, really badly and take up, you know, days of people's time. So that all, I suppose, rolls back to your policy, your procedure, and also your SLAs. So you've just got to work out what's going to be the quickest and easiest for all stakeholders and for both parties, being the client and the SME, I suppose.
So, Hayden, what are, say, three top tips for a change management implementation that makes it useful and not majorly painful for the people who have to use it? Because all my experiences of change management as a technical person have been awful. People who don't understand the technology are approving things. People who do understand the technology aren't involved, and it just adds another layer of bureaucracy, I guess, to getting your work done. I understand in theory it's a great idea, but what are your three top tips to getting a implementation of change management in that doesn't hinder everybody's ability to do their job?
Yeah, cool. All right. So rule number one of all rules for me, when you're having a meeting with Hayden McManus, a fast meeting's a good meeting. Very simple. So you need to have a predefined agenda. You have to stick to it, and you have to get in and get out. Quick decisions are important because, like I said, I have seen cabs go extremely badly and take up everybody's day, and that's not good for anyone. Rule number two would be, you hit the nail on the head there before, Simone. Make sure that you've got stakeholders involved, and they're not always technical people, as you said, but also make sure that you've got somebody on the cab who is a technical person who deals with that area. So that would probably be top tip number two. Top tip number three is always have a rollout plan. So something goes wrong, you can back out quickly and easily.
Well, those are really good points, and I share Simone's interests in doing change management effectively. I'll throw a play from my past. I've had both. I've had, really efficient change management and really clumsy change management. And I'll add a couple of tips. And one is that it's a regular experience, and everybody plays by the same rules, right? So if you have a larger organization, you don't want the mainframe group, which is in a lot of ways really different than what, say, the Windows Server team might be doing or something like that. But everybody goes through the same process, all right? Yes, it's a meeting of a decent size and number of people, but that was good because everybody knows a general, arrow in line flow of the business. And when you hear about this little piece being changed, well, that might relate to that and that. And it might only be once every 10 meetings that a question is asked about, well, what will that do to X? But that's exactly what the change advisory board is there to protect against, right, is unforeseen impact to other stakeholders or business processes or technologies in the organization. So I'd add really to be regular and include everyone to the same change advisory board. You don't want to have these little sub cabs going on for different groups, and everybody has different rules. That's one thing I'd also add, that it has to be the same process for everybody.
Yeah, totally agree with you there, Rick. That's a really good point.
When it comes to the SLAs of that and changes and SLAs, one thing that I kind of got stuck on, and I'll throw the question to you, Hayden, to see if you see this in your practice any. Do you see people making the same SLA for everything? So let me explain what I mean by that. So, like, if I'm a Windows Server guy or if I'm a virtualization guy, and I'll say I've got these, four or five common metrics, one of which is how quick I can restore it, one of which is how long I'm going to keep it, or whatever those basic metrics are. And let's just say it's a good SLA, right? But then let's just say I that's what I do for everything. Is that good, bad, ugly, or what are your comments on that type of approach?
Yeah, look, you do see a lot of companies out there coming along with this, what I like to call the cookie cutter approach. Trying to just stamp out SLAs that are the same for every customer and force their customers to work within the SLAs they offer. Some companies are going to be successful with that. And that's probably because they spend a lot more money on their business development managers or sales teams schmoozing their customers. A good IT company or a good ICT company, in my opinion, will have templates of SLAs and policies that they can offer to prospective new customers or even existing customers, and then they'll work with the business to finesse those into something that's actually useful to the people who are using the technology they're delivering.
Good stuff. So I'm going to try to bring it home here a little bit so people can go away with some homework, okay? So basically, what do people need to get started right now? We've summarized that you need to identify those stakeholders, have those conversations. We've thrown out some specific tips of what to look for, top tips for writing an SLA, and then, the changes associated with it. Those are all really practical things. And then, you know, where do you start? Well, any recommendations, Hayden, on sample policies, SLAs out there on the internet that you can think of off the top of your head? I'm sure we all can Google them and find them, but if you have a favorite.
Oh, look, there's a couple of places that you can look. In Australia in particular, there's an organization called the SMB IT Pros. Small to medium business IT companies can talk to those guys. They're really good. There's also MSP universities out there that do this kind of stuff. So if you Google the term MSP university, you'll find a really good resource on that. And probably various vendors that deal with tools for the SME market. So you've got LabTech, Kaseya, ConnectWise, people like that. They've got excellent resources as well, and they've got dedicated guys on their teams once you buy their product anyway that can help you with that. So that's probably worth looking into.
You've gone ahead, you've implemented change management, you've written SLAs, or you've grabbed some best practice SLAs from the internet. How do you go back in the future, and say 6 months' time, and make sure that you've implemented it correctly and that you're providing some benefit to the business?
Okay, well, if you've written an SLA properly, it should actually have reporting metrics in it. So in our case, that's usually a weekly report, which will be usually like a mean time to resolution and number of tickets in the help desk queue. It'll also be an uptime report of various servers, et cetera, et cetera. And then usually once a month, I have a sit down face-to-face meeting over a cup of coffee. It can either be, you know, our office, their office, or a coffee shop somewhere type thing, where we just sit down and have a chat about the business, how things are going, what they're planning on doing. You know, and if you want to be a good partner, you keep it focused on where the journey's taking you. So, you know, look at the stats and say, all right, yep, great, we've met these targets, or we need to change how we do this here to keep you guys running how you want to go. But, you know, you need to, if you keep talking about the journey of where the business is going and how it's developing, you can then find that the SLA becomes sort of like a living document, and it's continually upgraded to make sure that it's meeting the targets and meeting the expectations of where the business wants to go, because IT needs to be an enabler of the business.
So, Hayden, this is your first time on the podcast, and I do have an official gimmick, and it's called Three Views from You. I'm going to ask you three questions from different points in time, one from the present, the past, and the future. And these are just you as a technologist, you know, what you're working on now or what you've worked on before and what you look into the future as being most interesting. So let's start with the past. So, Hayden, what technology experience or story can you tell from your past that is most interesting related to technology?
Yeah, okay. So probably the most interesting thing that I've ever done with technology in the past is a mixture of different technologies. It was a use of the internet and computers and technologies just like Skype, like we're using to record this podcast. But it was also ham radio. And this took place in 2007 at the 21st Australian Scout Jamboree, of all places. And I was the leader of a team who put together a contact with the International Space Station for scouts to talk to one of the astronauts aboard the ISS. That was pretty cool.
Well, that is cool. Wow. That's like the coolest yet. That's awesome.
It was pretty good fun.
What about in the present right now? What's going on that you have the most passion for or the most interest in technology-wise?
Okay, right now I think my passion is around building a better user community in Melbourne for people who are a part of the AU TechEds group. We're looking at putting together, you know, some tech dinners where we just sit around a table in a restaurant somewhere talking just like we are now. But also extending on that by having some little workshops and just getting people more connected in the city of Melbourne.
Gotcha. How about into the future? What do you see technology-wise into the future that you have most interest, you know, or do you see most interesting into the future?
I'm actually really looking forward to working more with mobile device management into the future, because I'm really starting to see stuff take off there. You know, various platforms for managing stuff like the iPhone and Android phones, how they're integrating into businesses and becoming, you know, almost like laptops were 10, 15 years ago. I think that's going to be really interesting, and we should watch that space very carefully.
No, can't agree more. That's going, you know, that's the platform of choice going into the future for sure. Well, hey, let's bring it home, guys. Hey, Simone, thank you so much for co-hosting with me tonight.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Hayden, thank you so much for being on the show. You're welcome back anytime.
No worries. Thanks, guys. I really enjoyed it.